Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming out to Comic Book Club Live. Please give it up for your hosts, Alex, Justin, and Pete.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And that's our man of the booth, Boothman Prime.
Boothman Prime.
And gosh, you guys, we have been apart for so long, I almost forgot his name is Boothman Prime. I'm so sorry, Boothman Prime. Are you okay with me forgetting briefly who you are?
I'll take it.
Okay, all right, good.
What
that's
a
good.
Gentleman.
I've been in L.A. for the past 2 weeks. Justin, yeah. Nice to meet you. I've been in L.A. for the past 2 weeks, so we've been doing shows kind of apart all over the place.
Yeah.
But we're finally back here on stage.
It's great.
Best friends together. Not angry at each other for anything. Not yelling at each other backstage about anything.
It's like you're trying to cue me up to get angry. Before, you were like, hey, guys, let's all just be nice. And now you're poking the bear a little bit.
Let me just say you guys have changed a lot. You look somehow paler from being in LA for 2 weeks. And Pete, you're dressing like some sort of Cuban grandfather.
Yeah. It's so my new look.
Summer
I'm
look.
I'm very LA
I
now.
I love it, yeah.
I'm very LA.
Tito LePage, yep. They call him. Yep. It's very good.
Meanwhile, I could literally see through your shirt.
Yeah, but that's no different
yeah,
than normal.
Exactly. He loves the baby tees.
When did you last buy a t-shirt? Was it 1983?
Honestly, I bought this shirt at a thrift store when I was in high school, which I don't even want to tell you how long ago that was. Bodies don't change. Well, let's get our summer bods going on. Is it too late?
Yeah, it's too late.
Guys, this is exciting, though. I'm excited. Whatever we physically look like and how we feel, we're going to be talking about comic books.
Our voices are always the same. So you listeners at home, we're the same old shitheads.
Oh, Jesus Christ. All right, well, let's get into this. I'm very excited about the guests that we have on tonight.
Yeah,
they're two
guests.
Lovely people. Very excited to talk to them about all the stuff they have going on. One of them is a writer for BuzzFeed in the film and television department. And the other one is one of the stars of Amazon's upcoming The Tick. Ladies and gentlemen, a lot of Benedict Griffin Newman.
Yeah! Welcome to the show.
Come on
out. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Great to have you.
Hello.
Have a seat.
Hello.
Have a seat.
Hello.
Have a microphone.
Thank you so much. Justin, you were bending down for some reason and didn't shake Alana's hand.
Don't be offended, but no, Pete left some garbage over here, so I had to clean
it up. That was a cookie I got for you, you piece of shit.
Okay, great.
And now you guys understand the dynamic of the show.
Yeah, I got it. Okay, we call Justin a piece of shit. That's the dynamic.
That's what we call chemistry.
Guys, thank you so much for coming on. Alana, let's talk to you first. So you work at BuzzFeed. You are, I know you primarily online as a gigantic Harry Potter fan.
Which you're,
you're wearing. Yeah. Oh, there we go. Yeah. Okay, Harry Potter dress. But you also write about comics for the site sometimes.
Yeah.
BuzzFeed seems to be this big mystery to people. How do you pitch them on a comic book story? What kind of comic book story gets through?
For BuzzFeed, it's a big thing of like trying to find where with our audience it's going to land. And since it's a very like large, very mainstream audience, it's different than. At like my other jobs, like I used to work at the Mary Sue, which is a much smaller, much more geeky oriented by nature place. So it's really just about like finding something that either is pegged to one of the like big Hollywood things going on with comics or something that, you know, can help get more people into comics. Like my most recent stuff has been all about like tips and, you know, comics to get people into it in the first place.
Cool. So what are your recommendations then? I mean, we get that, I think, literally every single show people ask us, and we have a different answer every time, or try to have a different answer every time, but at a certain point we run out of tips, so what are your good tips that we can then steal?
And start with number one is one we often
use. Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
the
well,
first
one of mine,
comic.
Yeah, well, one of mine is to look at the things that you already like it, like if you're not into the comics as a format yet, look at the TV shows or the books that you love. You know, if you love something like Parks and Rec, go for something like Squirrel Girl or something. If you love hearing the news about the upcoming like Captain Marvel movie, then look at like those that's more recent comic, it's easier to delve into without like 50 years of history and like 1,000 different like writers who have all different aesthetics.
It is funny how people are like, man, I love comic book movies, like the Avengers. What's a good comic I could try to get into? It's like, well, you could try the Avengers. It's very much the same thing.
Yeah, but like which Avengers and right. what decade? True.
It is hard to, I guess. But I mean, they're truly, I think the companies try so hard to be like, look at this. It's so much like the thing you like.
I like Captain America Civil War. If only there was a book called Civil War.
Yeah.
Read. Yeah,
he gets so mixed up with the actual Civil War.
You've been fighting the good fight, I think, recently, and stepping for a Squirrel Girl TV series or movie or something like that?
Yeah, I did a post that a while ago that was pretty much like 13 productions that Marvel should do that they haven't gotten to yet and probably won't until 2050. But Squirrel Girl is on there. A sitcom of that would be pretty great.
So we've been talking for the past couple of weeks because it keeps popping up in the news. I think there's some sort of ethos around Squirrel Girl mm-hmm. right now. Who do you want to play Squirrel Girl?
That's a good question. I don't think that, like, I like Anna Kendrick a lot, but I don't necessarily think that she's the age or vibe for Squirrel Girl. I don't know. I've been seeing things about Barb from Stranger Things.
Yeah. That seems like a real... She's like just, specific. Like, popular.
Exactly.
Literally right now.
Exactly. People are just like, I like Barb. Where can I put Barb?
Yeah. Barb. But Barb, she's near the woods in the show.
She's near the woods. She's the party pooper. She doesn't want to stay at places. So if you also don't want to go to parties, then, you know.
It's also crazy to be like, let's have Barbie Squirrel Girl. She was on screen for 4 minutes. So I think she should be Squirrel.
Well, I'll say, and this is spoilers for Stranger Things right now, but somebody invited me in November. They're having a memorial for Barb in a local swimming pool, which I think is kind of amazing.
Yeah, that's incredible.
That is fandom to a strong level.
Yes, absolutely.
A friend of mine, Lauren Lapkus, she put her name out there, and I actually think she'd be great as Squirrel Girl.
That's a great contender. I saw that tweet, and I was like, that sounds... aces. I am also up for Mae Whitman, although I don't know how long she can play like college age people anymore.
Forever. Basically forever.
We're all young forever.
Well, I mean, Squirrel Girl seems like a little bit of a long shot as a TV show, but there's one thing that if it is successful, I think could help, and that's the tip. So
nice job, Alex.
Thank you.
It's beautiful.
My favorite part of our show is when there's actually a smooth segue, and then we stop and talk about it for a while.
If someone throws a great pass in a football game, the fans cheer.
You don't know that.
You're like the quarterback of segues in this show, and I'd like to take a second to really honor it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. This is like my Heisman Trophy.
Wow.
Great. That's good stuff. I think this analogy is really working.
I think so, too.
Notice I didn't
what's
say...
also working is the tick on Amazon.
Hey!
Oh, we did it again!
Yeah. Yes! All right. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show. So you are playing Arthur in the Tick. How did that happen?
I don't totally know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was a weird series of events. They didn't have I live here in New York, and they didn't have a casting person. I put myself on tape, which often feels like throwing pennies down a well, you know,
hell
in the
yeah.
hopes, like, no one's gonna hear, wishes aren't real, but the casting director was a fan of mine, and she emailed me back, which was, like, probably the best thing that anyone's ever done in my entire life. She emailed me back and said, I think you can do a better job of this.
Wow.
Oh my
like,
God.
I think you could play this part, and I think you have a better tape in you, which usually if you're self-taping... and you're not good in the first 2 seconds, they'll just, like, disregard you. Because if you're in an audition room, they'll give you notes and go, can we try it a second time, this and that. And she actually reached out and gave me notes. I did it a second time. And then, like, a day later, I got an email saying Ben Edlin wants to meet with you. Who's the creator of The Tick. Right. And, like, the only guy in history, to the best of my knowledge, who's, like, created a comic book property and been in control of every iteration of it. I mean, he's a very weird figure in, like, this pop culture landscape where, like, well, Batman goes through a billion different hands.
Right.
And he was the showrunner on the last two versions and the creator of the comic book and is the godfather of everything. So I went and got coffee with him, and we sort of talked just generally about, like, comic books and comedy and acting and philosophies, and we were on a very similar page. And I was like, well, this is great. I'll be able to tell people that he wanted to hire me and then that the studio said no. Like, I was very sure that that's what was going to happen because that happens a lot to me is, like, the creator is like, I like this guy. And they sent to the higher-ups and they're like, absolutely not for 1,000 reasons.
Were you wearing a moth costume?
I was, yeah, which is, I think, the main reason he liked me.
Right, sure.
But, yeah, it just, it somehow didn't die. I think he kept on pushing for me. And then the only, like, real audition I did was a screen test. I mean, I did the tape. I met with him. I did a screen test, but that was all maybe spread out over a month. And in between, there was a lot of, like, hand-wringing and people having to fight for me and me having to fight for myself and what have you. And they'd cast the woman who was playing Dot, my sister. Mm. Not my real sister, my character sister.
Yeah,
but they hadn't cast anyone else.
Your real sister is just in your family.
My real sister's just in my family.
Yeah, she doesn't need to cast those people.
No, yeah. No. She booked the part a long time ago.
Yeah. You could tell the difference between reality and fantasy, right?
Vaguely? Yeah. Ostensibly. Although now it's a lot fuzzier because I'm always like, oh, I feel like I could be a superhero and now they let me do that.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, well, maybe all my fantasies are real. But yeah, I did screen test with her. They hadn't cast the ticket or anything. And then after like a week, they told me I had the part, which was great. But then it was also terrifying because it was like, okay, you have the part. Now you have 2 months until you have to start filming where you have to not psych yourself out about this, you know? It's like very easy to like run the momentum of like, I could maybe get this. And then you get it and you're like, I could maybe fuck this up. I could really fuck this up. And now I only have time to think about how badly I could fuck this up.
But don't you see how that's very Arthur?
Yeah,
it is. That was the thing that was a real relief to me. I feel like it's the shortest walk I've ever had to a character. And I feel like a lot of, when I met with Ben, I don't know, in retrospect, I think maybe what he responded to was the way I talked about how badly I wanted to play the part, I think was very similar to, like, Arthur wanting to be a superhero and wanting That's people great. To give him the chance and, like, take it seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. It was a very short walk for me because it was just sort of like, this show is about Arthur living in a world. This version of The Tick is more sort of focused on this angle of Arthur living in a world where no one notices him. No one thinks he has any value, and he sort of innately has this belief that he can do something, and that feels a lot like being a struggling actor and a comedian. Yeah. You're like, someday this is going to connect, but like not yet. And when on a layer above that, in my mind's eye, the thing I was too embarrassed to ever admit to anyone is like, well, the best thing that could happen is someone lets me wear a superhero costume. Like that's the number one goal. To be able to go in there to like the audition and the meeting and everything and explain to them like, I get this guy. Because I feel the way about getting this part that he feels about fighting crime. And I also want to fight crime.
Yeah. Are you fighting crime?
I cannot confirm or deny at this point. Right. Yeah.
Well, the good thing is, after that long, intense period, it's been a super easy process to get it onto the screen, right? You filmed it, and then it's immediately going up, because Amazon's process is just like that, where it just goes up super quickly, right?
Yeah, it's the most convoluted thing in the world, and I'm having stress dreams every night. Amazon's process is that you just shoot the pilot. They've picked up only 2 shows straight to series in history, and one of them was today. But they want to make TV more democratic and more of a meritocracy. So rather than having a couple of like assholes in suits and boardrooms deciding whether or not people want to see something, they pick the pilots, they film them, they release them online publicly, and then anyone with an Amazon account, doesn't have to be an Amazon Prime account, any Amazon account of any kind, can watch the pilots for a 30-day window once they go up, and then there's a short survey after, and they monitor like the amount of views, they look at the survey results, which I think the survey is just like yes or no, you know, would watch again or not. Yeah. Fuck you. Get rid of that Griffin guy. I think it's like those 4
it's
questions.
Weird they added that last one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
so specific.
And that question has been on every single pilot they've ever posted. Yeah.
There was originally, this is funny, there was originally a Griffin in Transparent in the first episode.
Is that like, true?
Yeah. No.
Oh, okay. Well, I was gonna believe that.
Loosely based on you.
Yeah. And they got rid of him. They axed him really quickly. But yeah, the 30-day window starts this Friday, August 19th, and they'll look at that, and they'll look at tweets, and they'll look at reviews, and all sorts of fan feedback, and they aggregate all of that stuff into some sort of stew. It's not literally like a vote contest thing.
Yeah.
and they can pick up every show. Like, it's not, we're not competing against anything else, but they want to see that there's
a
demand.
That was the interesting thing. I was out at the TCA the past couple of weeks, the Television Critics Association, where they show off all their new shows and their some old shows, and Amazon was there for the Amazon Day showing off The Tick. Mm-hmm. They showed off a trailer, which sadly is not online, but it looked great. I was super surprised at Peter Serafinowicz's voice, that he was
so good.
Yeah, I mean, having heard him do other things, I wouldn't have expected the actual Tick voice, the deep, resonant voice, to be coming out of him. But the thing I was most surprised about was they were very specific that it's not that up and down vote that everybody thinks it is, that it's not the people choose the pilots. It's basically like, no, we choose the pilots, but we pretend. Then you could vote, and that doesn't really count.
Oh, you really shattered the whole system.
Yeah, yeah, I was all excited.
Griffin
to
just
vote.
Talked about it for so long.
I think it's somewhere in between the two things that we're saying. I think the reality is, like I think Transparent didn't get a tremendous amount of views against the other pilots that were out at the time, but the reviews were so strong that they were like, well, that overpowers this.
Right.
I think there are other shows that maybe didn't get the best reviews, but the view count was really high, or the social media feedback was big. So it's not like American Idol, where it's like, you're going to get passed or failed based on what people are saying. They're sort of using America as a focus group, you know, rather than taking six random people from a mall, which is usually what they do. They go, you want to see a TV show, and you have six people who might not want to watch this thing, or maybe running late to pick their kids up from school. And this is like, they're using the focus group of the people who would be interested in watching the show because they're the people who elected to watch the show. And
finally,
then they make a decision based off of everything.
Finally, we can trust internet commenters.
I know.
That's, to run everything.
That's the terrifying thing is to like, you know, we're recording this on a Tuesday and we're like 3 days out from this going live, the pilot. And I'm like, oh, the American public is about to decide whether or not I still have a job. Like, that's, I'm throwing that into their hands, you know?
We got you.
Yeah, we got you, man.
Yeah, we got you. We have a ridiculous amount of...
Alex, thank you for that. It was really
supportive.
No problem.
I just wanted to back you guys
up. Yeah, we got you.
I got you.
Okay,
I got you
Hollywood's
guys.
Alvin over here. Yeah, exactly. Here we go.
I just like to repeat whatever anybody else says.
Yeah, no, that's Hollywood.
So it is going up in a couple of days. Beyond what we talked about here, what, for those who aren't familiar with The Tick and don't know anything about The Tick, what's one thing you can tease that is going to make them definitely want to watch the pilot?
I'll say as a preface, I think this show's a hard reboot, and not just in terms of like resetting the canon, like Amazing Spider-Man or something like that. It's a totally different interpretation of The Tick done by the same guy who created the last two versions in the same way that the Warburton show and the cartoon show were different from each other and from the comics. So I think if you're a fan of The Tick, you'll see all the things you like, hopefully, and in a new way with some new things in there. I think if you have no prior knowledge of The Tick, it will function just as well for you. There's nothing you need to know going in. For fans of The Tick, the thing I can... sell that I'm really excited about. I just saw for the first time like a couple days ago the final cut of everything. And I think there is an action sequence in this of The Tick fighting a bunch of henchmen that I think is the first time we've gotten that in live action, a sort of very, very cartoony, heightened sort of superhero fight with the kind of gags in it and everything, because the Warburton show was like a sitcom and they had a limited budget and superhero movies hadn't gotten big at the time, so they had to kind of like frame it more as a parody of superheroes because there wasn't as much of a cultural reference point for live-action superhero stuff at the time. So that show weaponized this, like, oh, we'll cut to them at the Chinese food restaurant joking about the fight that happened off-screen. But I think there's a sequence in this, and if we get picked up, hopefully we'll provide all of you with many more of these. But I think there's a sequence in this where you have the Tick walking through, like, a warehouse with bullets like reflecting off of himself and flicking a guy like this and having him go against the wall, and the Tick in the middle of that with this sort of like manic, you know, like puppy dog sort of earnestness. And I think it's I don't know. I got very excited watching that scene as a fan. I also got excited because I wasn't in that scene, so I didn't have any self-consciousness. I was like, oh, I can just enjoy this scene. I don't have to look at my stupid face. But I think that's a thing that this show's offering that certainly the last live-action show didn't. I think it's an interesting balance of the stuff from the past versions and some new stuff, but I think maybe closest to the original comics of anything, maybe.
Awesome. Great. Cool.
So August 19th on Amazon?
Mm-hmm, and it'll be online until September 19th. And then for one day only, for 24 hours, it will be streaming on Twitch, which I'm sure is going to lead to a lot of really, really positive comments about my physical appearance.
Yeah.
But it'll be on Twitch August 31st.
All right, very cool. And Alana, before we move on, what do you want to plug? Where should people check out your stuff?
Twitter, I guess. Twitter.
That's a great platform.
@AlanaBennett. Two N's in both names and two T's in the second one.
All right, very cool. Guys, we're going to move on with our next section, which we like to call the stack.
Yeah!
And in the stack, we're going to talk about some comic books that came out this week.
Makes sense.
Some we might love, some we might not love. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Wow. That's like all reviews.
Yeah, there we go.
That's how they work.
Yeah, usually we say that we're going to go to bat for them, but I'm going to throw Pete under the bus by the end of the stack. So there we go. Empress, number 5. This was Pete's pick. Why'd you like this book, Pete?
Here we go.
Well, I really liked, first off, it's Mark Millar, so there's an underlying, like, this better be good because this guy's kind of a douche and I don't want to support a comic written by a douchey guy. But what I really liked about this is it has a great relationship. Kind of a power couple who both kind of fight and can kick ass. And it's very enjoyable read that has a lot of layers to it. And I was very impressed with this comic and I really liked it.
Justin, you've talked about on the show a bunch of times how you're very mixed about Mark Millar.
I feel like his work is one good one, like Nicolas Cage in the 90s. There's one good one and then one really bad one.
One for him and then one for nobody.
Exactly. One you just throw right in the garbage. And with this, I actually like this all right. But honestly, this is like... He was like, what if we had a Star Wars where everyone was a Han Solo? And that's what the book is. Everyone's awesome at their job and sort of fun and funny.
What about you guys? Have you been reading this? Are you fans of Mark Millar, mixed on Mark Millar?
I'm definitely mixed on Mark Millar. I like the stuff of his that I like a lot, but kind of what you guys were saying, if I like don't like it, if I'm sort of indifferent to a book of his, I will hate it more because I'm thinking about, like, he's this arrogant and the book's like that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to give him any credit, so he has to really kind of earn it in my eyes. I'm embarrassingly, I'm like a trade paperback guy, so I'm like way behind on everything because I have to wait like a year to read all the books. So I worked at a comic book store for a little while, and it kind of scared me off of single issues because as like an obsessive person, seeing all the nice, like... collections on the shelf, I was like, well, I hate that I have this all in a long box. I want to have it like on a shelf. So I just wait for everything now. Yeah,
you can put anything on a shelf.
You can have a good spine.
I have never actually read anything by him, but now I'm I'm sorry.
Nice. That's okay. You dodged some real books.
Now I'm just picturing a universe full of Han Solos, and it's a very... I have mixed feelings about it.
Yeah, I also have mixed feelings about this book. I mean, to be fair, I haven't been keeping up with this one like a lot of the other ones, but this is just, I definitely got that feeling. I think I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but you're totally right. Whereas people being like, I'm going to say a badass line. Now I'm going to say a badass line. The end. And that's pretty much it. It's also, to be fair...
It's a perfect book for Pete.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but you guys didn't like the relationship in there?
No. Was a relationship? Was it between a guy and his ship exploding?
Yeah.
Nope.
Which relationship? Yeah. You know, because all the characters are related in some way.
Yeah. I'm talking about how they were taking turns holding a baby, and then when the other person wasn't holding baby, it was their turn to kick ass. I thought that was like, look, you can balance family life and fighting. Like, what a great thing.
Now, see, that's an interesting lesson.
Yeah.
Because, like, the relationship, it's truly just holding a baby.
Right. And you just had a baby, so I figured this is what your life is like.
That's true. I thought you would immediately
relate to this comic.
I will say one thing that Mark Millar does, which I think is great, is he chooses these awesome artists to work with and really tries to showcase them as much as possible. The art here is by Stuart Immonen, who is amazing, and his stuff is gorgeous across the board. Right. So even though I had no idea what was going on in this book, it was a pleasure to look at.
Yeah.
There we go.
All right, let's move on
with your pick, The Vision, number 10 from Marvel Comics.
I mean, this is the best comic on the stands right now. It is so bleak and depressing.
Why is that good?
It's Because it's perfectly that. The art is just so right for that.
Every issue is depressing as shit.
So if you don't know, the Vision created a family for himself, and then shit went to hell.
Right.
Instantly, again, as a new father, whew, gotta pay attention.
Well, sorry, for those who don't know, can you just really quickly explain who the Vision is?
Sure, no problem. The Vision is a robot who is made by Ultron.
Synthezoid.
Okay, cool. That's very cool. He later became a synthezoid, I think, because he was just a robot first, and then he got a personality later on. Then he lost his personality after he was married to the Scarlet Witch and had two fake kids because she invented the kids, but they weren't actually real. And then they disappeared, and they came back later. They came back later in continuity as two different characters, and they haven't really related the two back and forth.
Okay.
And then so the Vision was he started as a series of different colors, and he was changed to a different other couple colors, and now he's back to these regular colors.
Okay.
And so anyway, he created this family, and then this other robot character that was also created by Ultron, Victor Mancha, came in, and he is a brother, but he's also working for the Avengers, and that's been a bit of a problem because he came in, he's buying on them, and he accidentally got his son killed, and so the Vision's upset, but he's a hero, but he's mad because his son got killed by this robot who's supposed to be his friend, and he's mad at the Avengers, and Iron Man, who's almost a robot, except inside he's a human, he's the one who's doing this whole thing, and so now he is confronting the Avengers because of that.
There we go. All right. That explains everything.
Yeah. Except it's really great also.
Yes, it is really great also. This book is fantastic. It's Tom King. I'm totally blanking on who's doing the art. If you guys could pass it to me or something, that'd be great. But the
Walta
art.
Belair?
Gabriel Hernandez Walta. Jordi Belair is doing colors, which are also gorgeous, and Clayton Cowles is on letters. This book is so claustrophobic. Tom King talks about it a little bit at the end of the book. He said, I got so scared when I pitched my editor on this that we could do an entire book where the family doesn't leave the house.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the entire comic book. They're inside the house. And it works. It's claustrophobic. So it's terrifying.
Stressful.
Spoiler, somebody breaks out of the house to fuck shit up at the end and make things even worse. We've talked about how this is almost like an AMC show of a book. Yeah. It's very Breaking Bad.
It's like Breaking Bad American Beauty meets
It's so good. Have you guys been checking out this book at all?
It has been the thing that's been most recommended to me recently, definitely, by people saying it's the best thing on the stands. I'm very excited that it's at issue 10 now, which means I'm probably 6 months away from buying the trade. As opposed to, you know, issue ones or fives, it's like, we're getting there. Yeah.
Well, I think
he has
think
two more issues, and then he's closing his run. So. Yeah.
That's what I like, a nice little self-contained run.
And Marvel's usually pretty good about releasing the trade pretty much as soon as it's done. Like, they don't wait too long, so you can definitely pick it up.
Maybe 4 months. Let's be optimistic. Yeah.
There we go. All right. Anything could work out. Yeah. All right, let's move on.
Before we move on, I just want to say that you guys are all over this fucking thing, but other people might read this and go, man, I want to fucking shoot myself. This is a depressing book that sits in the depressing and just wallows in it. And, like, there isn't a ray of hope in this whole fucking book, man. This is not going to end well.
This review has me so excited. He could not have sold me more on the book.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love a depressing robot story.
Yeah.
What's it missing? Like someone holding a baby, or
take turns fighting. No, I like you can do whatever you want to do, but like everybody's like, this is the best thing on the stands. And I'm like, all right, well, maybe this will be the issue that I can get on board. And I read this and I'm like, oh, this is so creepy. It's a depressed robot making more people depressed. And then I get depressed. And then I'm like, why do people like this?
I think it's working on you.
Yeah.
Aren't we all just depressed robots?
I hope I'm not a depressed robot.
If you were a depressed robot, do you think you'd know you were a depressed robot?
Oh, fuck you.
Holy shit. You just blew his mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious, actually, to get your guys' take on this. Why is it that we are so drawn to dark, disturbing comic books? Were there any in the past that you particularly liked?
I don't know. I'm a dark, disturbed person. I mean, I think it's that simple. I also like... I don't know. I like clashes. I like art and storytelling that has some sort of friction. So especially if you're doing dark, disturbing within like the confines of a superhero story or within like sort of light, childlike aesthetics, That is always interesting to me. I feel like it's kind of a better delivery system through, like, I'd rather watch the probing, like, exploration of the loneliness of being a human being told through Marvel's The Vision than I would just watch a movie about a dude sitting in a house by himself.
Somebody should do that. Somebody should remake this comic with just regular human beings.
Yeah, definitely. And it would be called American Beauty, I'm a big Jeff Lemire fan, and I feel like his stuff does that really well with sort of heightened genre elements. All of those books are just about loneliness or like inferiority complexes or, you know, the past haunting people and things like that. But like Sweet Tooth, I loved and I think was a very, very sad, disturbing book.
Yeah, that book was sad the whole time.
No, I mean, there were some bright spots. I mean, it got...
I
liked that more than this. Yeah. I mean, there was hope in that. They were like... racing to try to save the day, and this is just like, nope.
Yeah, but then
his wife is fucking losing her mind, and he doesn't give a shit.
He's a robot.
He's just sitting there in the room pulling his eyeball out and projecting pictures, and I'm like, go talk to your wife, you piece of shit.
Wow.
He is right. There was a lot of hope in Sweet Tooth because the guy was hoping that he could bury the body of his wife so he didn't have to carry it around anymore.
Yeah.
That was the uplift.
That's the kind of hope that lights Pete up.
All right, let's turn to something I'm sure Pete likes a lot. Big Batman fan, so this is my pick. I wanted to do this. Wasn't necessarily my favorite comic of the week, but I knew Pete would be excited to talk about this, so I wanted to bring this up. All-Star Batman, number one from DC Comics.
Don't clap.
No,
I
just wanted to say, so this is literally an all-star team. Scott Snyder is writing it. John Romita Jr. is on pencils. Danny Mickey on inks. Dean White on colors. There's a backup story by Scott Snyder and Declan Shalvey that is gorgeous. This is a beautiful look book. For those of you who don't know, Scott Snyder has been writing Batman for years now.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this a lot on the show. Mm-hmm. A lot of Scott Snyder's run has been about Batman's relationship with Gotham City, sometimes literally with the architecture of the city, the way it feels, the way it looks. So for this story, both Batman and Scott Snyder get taken out of the city. Batman finally says, enough is enough with Two-Face. We got to do something to change him. We don't know what it is. And he takes him outside of the city, trying to get to this house that's 500 miles away that is somehow going to cure Two-Face. But before they leave Gotham, Two-Face promises that he will release secrets on everybody in Gotham City if they don't stop him and get him back. And if they do kill Batman and rescue Two-Face, that he will give anybody the combined wealth of the three top criminals in Gotham City.
Right.
So it's basically, what was that movie? SWAT? It's the scenario from SWAT.
Yeah, SWAT.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's everyone's favorite movie.
I'll give you $1 billion.
Yeah. Cool.
That. But, you know, good. The art's gorgeous.
SWAT.
The action is exciting. It's Batman being Batman. It's great. There's literally nothing you can fault about this book. Right, Pete?
Fuck you, man.
All right.
So... this,
oh, do you have do you have a different hot take than that?
I agree that Scott Snyder is doing amazing things on Batman.
Now, I just want to, before you get into it, I just want to bring up that every once in a while there's a great comic book that comes along, and Pete has some very weird, specific opinion about it.
Well, let's just see if that's the same thing we're talking about here.
For example,
maybe he had an issue.
Mark Waid and Chris Samnee's Daredevil.
Yeah.
Gorgeous, wonderful, upbeat, fun, funny book. Brought Daredevil out of the doldrums that he'd been in for decades.
Yeah.
Pete got pissed off because Foggy didn't get enough lines or something
That they treated Foggy like a piece of shit. That they were just mean to him for no reason. And
there was like one line where he's like, Foggy, please don't do that.
No, that's not what happened.
Yeah, whatever
Maybe Pete has a problem with the narrative arc of this
book.
Yeah. Maybe it's something
Batman, something different.
Oh, that's
not
a larger
specific
relationship
and weird
based. Yeah, that's probably it. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I think it's bullshit that the big reveal, spoiler, is that, guess who sold out Batman? Alfred. Fuck you, Scott Snyder. Fuck you.
Interesting. So you didn't like Foggy and you don't like Alfred. I think you like the butlers of comic books.
Foggy is not a butler.
He's the Alfred of Daredevil. Except he doesn't handle he doesn't handle Daredevil stuff.
Wait. I know it's confusing you. Foggy doesn't have a mustache, but they're basically the same character.
Yeah.
No, they are not the same character.
Yeah, they're the same character.
They are not the same character.
Foggy dresses worse.
Okay, fine. I just don't think that... Why would Alfred sell out Batman if Batman's going to die and get wealth from criminals? That doesn't make any sense to me.
We don't
also
know.
Like
Alfred's a working man. He just wants to get a payday.
You think so?
You want to be a butler for 30 years?
Imagine you're Alfred for a second, right? Your sure. entire life is nothing but living in a cave and delivering sandwiches that never get eaten.
Exactly. Oh. Think how many hundred times he's like, "Here's your food," and Bruce is like, "I'm busy," and he's like, "I made this." Yeah. I made this food
Alfred's
for you.
Alfred's like, please don't go out tonight. And he's like, I'm going out.
Yeah. What does Alfred do? He sits home alone.
I'm
all the
sure
time.
There's turmoil, guys. I'm just saying, I don't think Alfred wants to see him dead.
How do you get along with your butler?
Wait. Hold on.
Amazing. If I had a butler,
could I just mention something?
We would be best friends.
Could I just mention something?
Yes.
Do you remember? So we did the show in L.A. Yeah. And Justin got busy. He had been brought out there.
I got
really
busy.
Hold on. Fired up. Justin didn't fucking show. Then he was too late. He was.
All I was going to say is that for 10 years we've been doing the show, Justin wasn't able to make our LA show because of a prior commitment,
right.
And you freaked the fuck out.
Sure.
So imagine Alfred, Batman never shows up to anything. So think about how he'd feel.
Yeah.
I've joked about killing Justin.
Where are you going with this?
Yeah, exactly. I've maybe thought about hurting you or punching you in the face and strangling you with my bare hands, but I wouldn't actually want to see real harm.
Hey,
actually,
Pete,
yeah.
I'll give you the combined wealth of the top three criminals in New York City if you kill Justin.
No way, man.
Thanks,
I wouldn't
man.
Sell out my boy.
Hey, you're a great Alfred.
Fuck you.
Okay. That turned very quickly.
I prefer Foggy.
Let me ask you guys. Do you,
you
think,
dress like Foggy.
Using your knowledge of Alfred from the films and the movies and this comic and everything else, can you understand him betraying Batman? Alana?
I mean, sometimes you need the paycheck, but like, I like my sidekicks more loyal than that.
Thank you.
Right, that's yeah, right.
So I don't know. I mean, not having read this book, yeah, as a sidekick, speaking for all sidekicks, yeah. This might be a Captain America Hail Hydra type yeah. thing. We're talking about issue one here. Perhaps, you know, a couple issues down the line, we're going to understand that there was actually a triple cross happening, that he's not Ooh. Betraying Batman in the way he thinks. I have no insider information, but I would assume that Scott Snyder is a very smart man. He understands the legacy of these characters. And I would think that if he was doing that, there would perhaps be some larger point.
Griffin, are you trying to say that maybe Pete was tricked by some sort of cliffhanger reveal? Pete LePage, the man who's never been fooled by a last page of a comic book?
I'm going to say this, and I don't want to shake things up too much, okay? But I think sometimes comic book writers try to put something crazy in their book that will incentivize you to buy the next issue.
Unbelievable.
These are veritable Bibles written by earnest men yeah. sitting in their monasteries.
Can you imagine if the Bible was released back in the day, like comic book style, and people were like, this fucking Jesus, he's dead. I'm telling yeah. you, he's dead. Guy is yeah. not coming back.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, yeah, I pick up I picked up Mark. Yeah. I know you're waiting for the trade, but right. Mark's fucked up. Yeah. A lot of fucked up yeah. stuff happens in Mark.
The fucking variant covers on the Bible would have been yeah. such a nightmare.
Oh, well, fuck, I'm three books behind. I'm in yeah. John right now. Does it get better?
Does it get better?
You read Revelations? Holy shit. Don't spoil Revelations. I'm trying to get to it. Sorry, we can talk Old Testament if you want.
No, yeah, that's fine. Because I'm Jewish?
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks. I would appreciate that. Thank you so much.
I know that's your stuff. So.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what any of this stuff is. Yeah, I don't Revelations. Know sports or New Testament or whatever.
Revelations is like the end of the Infinity Gauntlet, basically. So
oh, I'm into that. Bad.
Yeah, exactly.
You got me back. Cool. Definitely pick that up. Shut up, Pete. And that's it for the stats.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
Wait, so you read this comic and you were like, oh, that's a great idea.
Yes.
Yeah, I liked it too. Two-Face is a great villain, and this is Batman on the road. Win.
Yeah, I want to know more of why.
You were like, oh, I love the idea of Alfred
Sorry,
selling
did
Batman
you not hear when I said that's it for the stack?
No.
That's
all right,
your
we're going to move on
to
the next section, which is my favorite section because you guys make it up. It's your audience questions.
Yeah.
And for that, I'm going to come out to you guys because I love talking to you guys and I love giving you prizes. All you have to do is raise your hand to ask a question for one of our amazing guests or for the whole panel, whatever you want to do. And you're going to get some free comics and trade paperbacks. And postcards, it looks like.
Yep.
It does look like that.
All right, there we go. Is that a postcard for your show, Pete?
Yep.
Huh.
Interesting.
Interesting. All right, question about absolutely anything. Just raise your hand. You, sir, over there. The lights are very bright. Can you...
Yes.
You and... Yeah. Yes, you. Blue shirt.
Old blue shirt.
Old blue
All right,
shirt.
What's your name? What's your question?
Hi, I'm Mike. I want to ask the new Mike. Arthur. Did you ever think you'd be playing a part created by the great... Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees.
Not created by, but originated by. He didn't write the book. I didn't. No, that's the short answer. I feel honored. I feel privileged. You know, I auditioned. I pitched a Monkees reboot once a year for my entire life. That's not true.
Give us a backstory on that before.
Mickey Dolenz was the original voice of Arthur in the cartoon show for the first season, and then was replaced by Rob Paulsen. I will say Dolenz is my favorite Arthur. I don't know. I tried not to do an impression of it, but he was maybe the guy I looked to the most. I felt like his version had the best balance of real, like palpable neuroses. You know, I think there's a fine line with Arthur between being whiny and being relatably scared. And I feel like Dolenz did that really well. I know that's not the answer to your question exactly.
Well, I didn't know who was replaced, so.
I'm sorry. Yeah. No, but I mean, I think Mickey Dolenz was great. I've been trying to figure out. I kind of want to reach out to the other Arthurs and like talk to them.
Have an Arthur con.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to meet Coleman Townsend recently. Townsend Coleman. I flipped his name. Who was the voice of the Tick on the cartoon show. And I was sort of saying to him, like, I don't know. It feels weird when you're in, like, a legacy of a thing, and there have been three other guys who played your part.
I mean, that would be a great Comic-Con thing to do, is get a bunch of all the Ticks and Arthurs together and have
I'm a Monkees fan. I'd like to meet Mickey Dolenz. I have an excuse for the first time.
Exactly.
You know, so I'll use that.
Take advantage of that.
Yeah.
I'm curious, Alana, if you could play any comic book character on screen, who would you play?
Oh, interesting.
That's a good question. Well, last Halloween I went as America Chavez.
Awesome.
I might do that. Right. Yeah.
That's very cool.
You guys heard that, oh God, who created America Chavez? Was it... Whatever it is, they weren't happy with what Marvel was doing with her, so they're creating an image title called Miss America, but spelled slightly differently, I believe, that is basically the same exact character, which is fascinating. Anyway, that's it. That's a little fun fact for you guys. You're going to get some free comics. You, right over there, saw your hand. What's your name? What's your question?
My name is Anna Menta, and I have a question for Alana, which is, speaking of getting into the comics world that's kind of overwhelming and maybe not feeling like there's a place for you, what's the comic that got you into comic books and why?
Nice.
Great question. I actually had like a pretty late start to comics. I didn't start reading them until after college. And the one that got me into it was the moment that I decided to get to like dive into comics was when Ms. Marvel with Kamala Khan was announced.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Yeah. That is very recent.
Yes. That's when I dove headfirst.
Cool. What about you, Griffin? What's the comic that got you into or back into comics?
My mother, ironically, didn't let me watch or read superhero stuff growing up, which probably left me with a drive to become a superhero and nothing else to prove her wrong.
To prove her wrong? You'll never be a hero.
Yeah.
You can't watch any of
this stuff isn't worth your time, you know? She thought it was too violent. I was the first kid, and she was terrified that everything was going to ruin me, which it then did, but of my own volition. When I started reading comic books, it was definitely... I from a young age, read like the comic books that were based off of cartoon shows that weren't about superheroes and would try to sneak issues of superhero comics. So I was reading like the Looney Tunes comics and the Scooby-Doo comics that DC was publishing at the time, which were good. But then Ultimate Spider-Man was definitely the first big superhero comic that... I guess it was just the first thing at an age where I was old enough to have the autonomy to go to a comic book store by myself and my mom couldn't tell me what to buy or not, that I was able to start from issue one
and really feel invested in. Because, you know, the mythology can get very overwhelming, especially in pre-Wikipedia age. So Ultimate Spider-Man was, like, kind of my title for a while.
Gotcha. My first was probably Foggy and Alfred team-up.
Man, that's a great team-up,
those guys,
by the way. Yeah.
Alfred made the sandwiches and Foggy ate them.
Yeah.
When it turned out at the end that they were both betraying each other, though, I fucking threw that comic away.
Yeah, exactly. That was garbage.
Yeah. Pete, what about you?
Well, he didn't give a real answer. Kind of to touch a little bit on what we're talking about is when, for me, like, the first time I really fell in love with comics is when I was able to walk around the comic book shop by myself and, like, go to what I was drawn to. I spent some time looking at stuff and then finally was like, what is this? And it was Eastman and Laird's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It was black and white. The penciling and the art just, like, sucked me into this world, and I never wanted to leave.
I think I've talked about this on the show before, but I pretended that I got away from comics for a while when I was, you know, all cool and stuff.
When was that?
I would like to hear about that time.
You were all cool?
There's a period.
You were in college?
Yeah, what? Sure. Yeah.
You were the Zach Morris of Cornell. <right? Yeah.
laughs> Exactly. Anyway, I was pretending that I wasn't reading comics for a while, but I had read a bunch of stuff about Infinite Crisis, and I love the fact that they were building it up in DC Comics for like 2 years before then, because I'm just a really big fan of slow story building. And they were selling Countdown to Infinite Crisis for 99 cents. And I remember standing there in the comic book store staring, and I'd be like, oh, fuck, if I do this, it's all downhill from
and
here.
And look at you now, you
look
little
at me
monster.
Now, my disgusting face on this horrible show.
You'd be like, no, get that out of your hands.
No, you can get away from 10 years of this show. All right, that was a great question. I'm kidding. I wouldn't trade this for anything.
That's
guys are great.
Sure.
Cool, let's get another question. You, sir, what's your name? What's your question?
My name is Connor.
Hey, Connor.
How are you? Peter. I was wondering, do you think we'll ever see a live-action Earthworm Jim film? And if we did, who would you want to play Earthworm Jim and the rest of the cast?
Oh, great question. What do you guys think? Will we ever see a live-action Earthworm Jim? And who would play Earthworm Jim? Who's skinny enough? Jim Carrey.
Yeah, you got to have a skinny face.
Yeah, Jim Carrey would be great.
Jim Carrey.
Yeah, sure, Jim Carrey. Can I tell you about a little conversation I had with my daughter last night?
Yeah, this is probably pertinent.
Yeah, well, it was just to Jim Carrey because she was telling me she was watching Harry Potter on DVD and there was some ad for a movie and she's like, oh, it's really funny. Probably like one of those comedy shows you do because, you know, but I don't know what they are because they're too adult. You know, it was funny for adults. Anyway, she started describing the stuff this guy did that she thought was maybe called Steve. And it sounded, I was like vaguely trying to remember. I was like, was the guy named Ace Ventura maybe? And she's like, no, I don't think so. I was like, all right, was it a movie called Ace Ventura Pet Detective? And she's like, no, that's not a comedy. I was like, no, he's a pet detective. It's an inherently funny premise because he's a pet detective. She's like, no, that's very serious if you lose pets.
Yeah. I mean, that's she's it. Right.
She told
anyway,
you.
There you go. Cool.
Earthworm Jim live action? I don't know. Perhaps an actual earthworm would be the best.
Yeah, that'd be good. That we irradiate?
Yeah, I guess. Isn't that the whole thing?
But do you think we'll ever see, are you guys familiar with Earthworm Jim?
Yeah, I was an Earthworm Jim fan. I feel like it'd be a tough one to do in live action because almost every character would have to be CGI.
Right.
You know, it's not even like, I mean, Jim, you could have like a human being in the suit, but the head would have to be totally CGI'd. And then like Peter Puppy in both forms. Like you're dealing with so many animals and non-humanoid body types. So you could maybe make a movie where you built a bunch of sets with no one on them and then put CGI characters into it.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, I'd like to see a new Earthworm Jim in some form. I just feel like doing it in live action might be the most expensive movie ever made.
Just as a quick bit of background, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it was created by Doug Tanapple, and it was the first claymation video game. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the thing. I was like a big claymation nerd as a kid, so I think that's why I liked Earthworm Jim at that time. Yeah.
That's cool.
All right, we'll see what happens.
It was real cool.
Super cool.
It was probably during the period where I was a really cool guy, so I just didn't notice it.
You were the Zach Morris of claymation.
Yep. This is a question actually from Facebook. Josh Pickett asks, since I can't be there in person, I'll ask the question here, which was on Facebook. I just finished reading Pete's favorite weird event, Frankencastle.
Fuck you, Josh.
You don't even know him.
Listen to the show. Don't say that to our fans. I was wondering what everyone else's favorite weird comic storyline is. Mine is Batman as a vampire arc.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, yeah.
There we go. So, Pete, other than Frankencastle, what's your favorite
Stop saying that.
What's your favorite?
Frankencastle was awful.
It wasn't. Okay, what was your favorite?
So
what was it? You're getting hung up on this one detail.
Because you keep bringing it up.
Okay, but other than Frankencastle, which was great, what?
No! Stop saying that!
What's your favorite weird comic book card? Justin.
There we go.
Huh? We'll skip. We'll skip this guy.
No, wait, do you have one?
Yeah.
Great. What is it?
It was when Ben Grimm and Wolverine got depowered and they would just, they were friends and they would solve crimes together. It was great.
Did that happen?
Did that really happen?
Yeah.
I like, that made me think of the arm wrestling issues between the Hulk and the Thing.
Yeah.
But those were. That's not what you're talking about.
Yeah. Wait, are you talking about the Hulk and Thing big change where they went to an alien planet and ate a ridiculous amount of hamburgers? That was pretty weird.
Yeah. I'm a big... The first thing that comes to mind is the X-Men baseball games.
You always talk about this bullshit.
I do not always talk
about
this.
You always talk about this bullshit.
I never talk about this.
That's not true. Then why am I annoyed?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think it's your shirt has like too much starch in it or something.
Why do you keep making fun of my shirt?
I don't know.
Fuck?
Because you look like one of the big bad voodoo daddies on his day off. So yeah, I like those baseball games, as I was saying. When Captain America was Nomad for a while, that was a good run. Remember that?
Yeah.
He just gave up everything.
Yeah.
Sometimes
Griffin, what about you? Favorite weird comic book storyline?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in keeping in line with what I said earlier, my favorite weird storyline is probably because of how banal and normal it is. The sort of contrast, but the first arc of, and I'm going to butcher his name, but the Marvel Knights 4 book from about like 10 or whatever years ago Aguirre Sacasa, or whoever you say his name, wrote... which was called A Wolf at the Door, which was about the government pulled their funding from the Fantastic Four, and they all had to just like move into a two-bedroom apartment and get day jobs. I loved that book. I feel like people hated it at the time, but it was like the things a construction worker and Reed can't get employed because he's like too smart for any job. He can't like figure out basic interpersonal skills, and Sue's a substitute teacher. I loved that arc. I thought it was great. But the weird part was that
what was Johnny Storm?
This is the thing I really liked about it. He like tried to become a reality star, essentially, like record albums and make talk show appearances and sort of do like Big Brother and like, you know, cash in off of that. But it very quickly dried up. And then he ironically became a fireman because he could withhold the fires. But yeah, I loved that book because it was just the Fantastic Four not wearing costumes, being sad, being like, electricity bill's really high this month.
You know? Alana, what about you?
Mine is probably the storyline in the Buffy comics when Don is a giant all of a sudden.
That's right.
Oh, that was very weird. Yeah.
I just thought it was the perfect way to jump to the comics from the show because I just kept picturing how they would do that on the show. Just,
yeah.
Doesn't she then become a centaur after that?
Yeah. I believe so.
Yeah, that was weird.
Stopped at some point before the centaur bit.
I like they were still sort of couching the series as like, it's straight from the TV show.
Yeah.
No one wrote this script and was like, let's make this.
Mine's Frankencastle. Okay, we have time for one more question. Anybody in the crowd? Free comics? Sir. Yes, you raised your hand. Sorry, I just can't see the lights. Come on up. What's your name? What's your question, sir?
Pablo is my name.
Hey, Pablo.
Nice.
I have a question for all of you.
Oh, great. That's what we're here for.
So, what do you guys think is the greatest sidekick in comics?
Ooh. Greatest sidekick?
Everybody say Arthur, quick. Say Arthur, who will get really mad.
Well, I think Griffin might
he'll
say.
He'll get so mad.
You know, yeah, he'll get so mad.
He'll hit us again.
Greatest sidekick. That's a tough, because there are so many, but there are only a couple that are really, like, hanging around.
Foggy, Alfred.
No, they're not really sidekicks. They're like, I don't know, support staff? They're like interns.
Fuck you.
I'll give a cheap answer because I
Why
can't think
can't
of anybody.
They just be friends?
I'll give a cheap answer. I mean, Robin, I think, is the obvious one. But Blind Spot in Daredevil is actually really good right now. It's written by Charles Soule. I'm blanking on who's doing the art for the book, but It's this character who's basically Daredevil's trainee slash partner, and it's a really interesting dynamic. He can make himself mostly invisible. He's powering a lot of the storylines right now. I'm really enjoying him. Pete, what about you?
Yeah, I would just like to real quickly talk about that. Yeah, it's great, too, because like their relationship is fantastic, and there's also this turmoil with his status in the country and all this kind of stuff, and it's like it's talking about a lot of great stuff, and the book is really well written, and yeah, I wish we talked about Daredevil, but yeah, I would have to say
like we did just now, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, in the stack. I don't
great.
Know.
We'll like, come back to you, Justin.
Yeah,
I like to think of the Punisher as a sidekick.
Fuck. I mean. Stop just saying things to make me angry and, like, answer the question.
I think he's the sidekick to all of his guns. Oh, wow. He facilitates all of them going
off. Yeah, you can't argue with that.
Yeah, yeah, I got you.
I had to go deep on me.
That's not very deep, by the way.
I can't answer anyone but Arthur at this point out of contractual obligation. Yeah. No, I have spent the last 8 months, like, reading and rereading and watching and rewatching everything so much that it's like I've internalized that character so fully that I almost forget that other characters exist at this point. But wow. I do think Arthur's a great sidekick. It's a nice balance of sometimes he's secretly kind of leading the team and sometimes he's very much support. And he's a counterbalance. I think that's what you want out of a sidekick is a sort of id-ego relationship in some sort of way.
And if I may give a real answer, Rick Jones in the Incredible, in Peter David's Incredible Hulk run, I think was a great sidekick because he was like the guy that kept the Hulk sort of chilled out and he would just riff on his guitar sometimes. Great.
Alana?
Both of my choices probably don't count necessarily, but they've definitely been framed as sidekicks sometimes. In the movies, I would say Sam Wilson is my favorite. And in the comics, Kate Bishop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great answer.
That's awesome.
Though she would say she's not a sidekick.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like, she's solo all the way. But
you sort of have the Hawkeye hair going on right now. Yes. So I think that's very real.
Nice setting.
Pete, did you have a real answer?
Yes. Amadeus Cho, when he was... With Hercules and then the Hulk, I thought that, speaking of the counterbalance, that made me think of that. So that's what I'm going to go with.
All right, very cool. That's it for your audience questions. Yeah. All right, guys, we're going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn over to Mr. Pete LePage.
All right, guys, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win 25 free dollars. Who would like $25 free? A simple raising of your hand. Have you won before?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then you get up here.
Yeah.
Nice.
What is your name, sir?
Savage Skinner.
Audience, Savage Skinner. Whoa. What's up? Are you in a band or something, dude? That's
like a badass.
It's like a title, not a name.
Solo guy.
Cool. All right, so how this is going to work is today's trivia is on the tick. So as long as you are listening at the early part of the show, you should get all three of these answers correct, and then you will win $25 free, which I will give you at the end of the show. I forgot to get the gift card out of my bag, but you will get it.
That's some great backstory for the listeners at home.
All right, here we go. Question number one. The new tick pilot for Amazon has the tick dealing with blank. Is it A, memory loss, B, the loss of limbs, or C, the loss of his TV show on Fox? So it's either A or it's B.
Mm.
I'm going to go with A.
A is correct.
Great
Congratulations,
job.
Sir. Here we go. Question number two. There will be new characters on the show, like Arthur's sister. Her name is what? Is it A, Diane, B, Dot, or is it C, Dinobots? So it's either A, Diane, don't pick A, or it's B, the correct answer, Dot.
Got to go with B on
B is correct.
Nice.
Well done.
Great job.
All right, so we talked about the creator earlier of the tick. He will serve as what on the show? His name is Ben Edlund. What will he be on this new show that we hope does really well? Is it A, he's going to be the star, B, he will be the executive producer, or is it C, he will be customer number three, in every scene in the background. So it's either A, which you shouldn't pick, or it's B, an executive producer.
It's going to be the executive producer.
Yes, he will be the executive producer. $25, congratulations to you, sir.
Congratulations.
Unbelievable. Guys, as we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. Yep. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show, but also they're a great shop, so you should go there.
It's a great shop.
It's a great shop. I know my voice went high, so it sounds like I'm lying, but we actually love it.
Wow, that's a weird promotion.
What are you looking forward to?
Well, Tales from the Dark Side number 3 is coming out tomorrow. We didn't get a chance to talk about Tales from the Dark Side number 2, which was amazing. I can't wait for this next issue. It's been an amazing series and quite an amazing team on this book. So that's why I'm.
Do you want to say anything about it?
It's Gabriel Rodriguez's art is just mind melting, and Joe Hill, who is an amazing writer.
You know, in the back of this issue, number 2, he talks about the next Lock and Key that's coming out in December.
Are you serious?
Did you
There's
read
another
about that?
Fucking Lock and
Did
Key?
You read it in the back? There's a little page about
it's true.
It.
No, I didn't see that.
Well, you should look at it. You should read the whole book.
Well, I usually do, but sometimes I don't read the ads in the back or whatever. Because I'm like, okay, next comic.
Yeah, you're just blazing.
Yeah, okay, I won't say the thing that I was going to say. Justin,
we've been very mean to Pete tonight.
Yes, we have. I'm sorry, Pete.
But I'm sorry. I love you, Pete.
Oh, wow. We're Jedi married.
I know. No, let's never forget that. I'm looking forward to Black Widow number 6. Great comic. Great team on that. Black Widow has been doing bad things and is fighting with basically everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's beautifully drawn.
Yeah, it really is. It's a fantastic book.
I'm looking forward to Aliens Defiance number 3 from Dark Horse is coming out tomorrow. A big fan of all of the Aliens comics that they've been doing. They're really good. But this one, we talked about it on the show before, has such a crazy concept for an Aliens book. They all always seem to follow the same tropes and the same narrative path. Here, it's a woman stuck alone on a spaceship with aliens, and there's all of these androids who are basically like, nope, we're going to take out the aliens. And they kill all of the aliens on the ship and take care of them, and then say, hey, these aliens are really dangerous. Let's go kill all of the other aliens. And then they take the ship and start killing aliens all over the galaxy, which almost seems directly against everything that's ever happened in any aliens thing ever.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. And it's on the 3rd issue, so you can jump right in. It's so good, but so deep and so much fun at the same time.
What's the subtitle of that series?
Aliens Defiance.
Defiance. I certainly now will be reading that. I'm a big Aliens fan, especially the androids always were my favorite part. Looking through that list, I mean, yeah, it's the things I'm looking forward to reading in a trade months from now. But I've been really, really into all the Marvel Star Wars books. I think they've been really, really consistent and strong since Marvel took over that. And Poe Dameron, I think much like most of America, was my favorite character in Force Awakens. So I'm very excited to see the Poe Dameron series trekking along and getting to a point where that trade is becoming closer and closer. I think had a morbid curiosity. Saying also that it was sort of an entry point for comics for me, I'm very curious about the Scooby Apocalypse book. I kind of vomited much like everyone else when the first pictures came out. But I've heard some sort of interesting defenses of it, and I kind of, you know.
It's pretty weird in a really interesting way.
Yeah, I mean, I like weird, and, the old one does exist. It's not killing my childhood if it's not good. I'm down to see a reinterpretation. I heard the Flintstones one is, like, legitimately very strong.
I've heard that came out this past week, I think.
Yeah, I've heard the Flintstones one is great, and Scooby Apocalypse I've heard a couple defenses of, but I will read that eventually,
And plug your stuff. What should people check out?
Yeah, August 19th, The Tick. Watch it many, many, many times. Please keep it playing on loop. The one word of advice I can give out is Amazon is like Big Brother, and they watch you, and they know everything you're doing. If you stop watching the pilot for any reason, it tracks badly in terms of their numbers. So, in this time shift culture, if you watch a little bit, and then you go do laundry, and you come back, it might hurt us.
I thought what you were going to say is watch The Tick and then immediately buy a washing machine on Amazon.
Well, please do that. Yeah, 100%.
That's the best. Yeah.
Yeah.
That kickback will go to me if you buy a washing machine. No, just make sure, carve out 30 minutes to watch it clear so you can watch it straight through. But that's the main thing. I host a podcast called Blank Check with Griffin and David. And you can find me on Twitter. I'm Griff Lightning. But watch The Tick. Don't think about anything else. Just watch The Tick over and over again.
Alana, what are you looking forward to?
I would like to mimic Black Widow number 6, especially after that recommendation. Another one, I also tend to wait for trades, but more Wicked and Divine is something I'm always looking forward to.
So good.
That was great. What should people check out from you?
My writing every day on BuzzFeed.com, the website, and on Twitter. A lot. I tweet too much.
All right. Very cool. Couple of things before we go. The show is free to come see live and free to listen to online, but it does cost us a fair amount of money to put together. There's a couple of ways you can support it. If you're physically in the audience, we have a hat somewhere over there, maybe, Pete.
Nope. You don't? Forgot that.
We have a hat right next to you. There you go.
Almost.
We're rusty, you guys. We haven't been together in a couple of weeks, but we got a weird hat lying on the floor. Definitely not sketchy. Throw a couple of bucks in there. That would be appreciated. We also have a Patreon account, which is a bunch of fun rewards. We're going to have some stickers that we're going to be sending out shortly.
Yeah.
Thank you on the show. We will Jedi marry you. I don't know. Maybe we should add that.
We don't have that kind of power.
Yeah, there you go. But you can check that out on patreon.com or there's a GoFundMe if you don't want to do a monthly amount. Either way, it is much appreciated because you guys are amazing. Pete, what do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to hear about the amazing guests we have on the show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
You can check us out at comicbookclublive.com, nerdist.com for the podcast and more. A couple of people we want to thank before we go. We want to thank Griffin for being on the show. We want to thank Alana. We want to thank our fabulous interns, Emma Bell, Tom Radar, Craig Fletcher, David McKay, and Riley Trahan. We want to thank Luis DC on photo. But most of all, we want to thank you guys. We're here every Tuesday night at 7:30 at the Pit Loft in New York. Totally free. Please tell your friends. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Everybody. Thanks for coming out.